talk to the committee members about why we don't have anything at this point that looks like legislation?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 720A, as I believe you know, is the bill that would allow the state or authorize the state to issue Article 11G bonds for community college projects. Article 11G in the state constitution allows the state to issue bonds for the educational facilities of community colleges and higher ed. The state has not issued any Article 11G bonds for community colleges since the 1979 session. What Senate Bill 720 would do is it would issue, for the first time since 1979, Article 11G bonds for community college capital construction projects. To answer your question as to why you don't have amendments here, we are having a set of amendments being drafted that should be arriving fairly soon. Because this is a type of bond that the state has not issued for over 20 years, we are trying to be very careful to make sure that we do it right. We can't just simply copy or add on to what the state's been doing already. We need to make sure that the language is correct, and we've been working to get you language that will work and will allow the bond proceeds that are approved to actually be distributed to the community colleges. Before those amendments arrive, though, I have prepared some materials that may be helpful for you to look over in preparation for their arrival. What I have prepared is a draft budget report, that we would finalize if you approve the amendments as they come to you. Let me mention a little bit about how these amendments will change from the bill that comes before you from Senate Education. The Senate Education Committee took the proposal by community colleges for capital construction projects and forwarded it to you on a reduced basis. Some of those projects were taken out. And since that, through negotiations, community colleges restricted their project list further. The amendments that are coming forward represent an additional restriction. To comply with approved funding levels, the projects are restricted to a total of $100 million in amount, which would be financed with $50 million of Article 11G bonds and $50 million of community college resources. The projects would be one project financed at each of the state's 17 community colleges. And when I say at each, it's for each. In some cases, the facilities may not be on the main campus of the college, but they are 17 projects for the 17 community colleges. Another change that is occurring in the amendments that you will be receiving from those that you that came to you in the A. Engross version of the bill, and by the way, I have not distributed copies of the A. Engross version. I can get those to you if you'd like, but when the amendments come, they will be entirely gotten stuff, and they will be you won't need to look at the original bill to see what's going on. But there are many administrative and, if I may use the term, technical changes that will be contained in the amendments that do not affect the amount of funding that would be provided to the colleges, but are designed to assure that the SIT process works in the way that we are doing. The state does bonds currently, and in a cost-effective manner. One of the ironic things about the proposal, as it will come to you, is that although these are bonds that will be used for community colleges, the administration of the bond program will actually be with the Department of Higher Education and not the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. The reason for that is a cost-saving measure. The Department of Higher Education issues Article 11G bonds and has been doing that continuously for quite some time. They have the staff, they have the expertise for doing that. The Department of Community Colleges, as I mentioned, there have been no bonds issued since 1979, and they don't have a capital section, a capital staff to do that. So in order to avoid the need to replicate staffing, the amendments will have the Department of Higher Education actually issuing the bonds and distributing the proceeds. And this arrangement has been discussed with both departments, and both departments feel comfortable, to my knowledge, with the arrangement as it's worked out. To talk a bit about Article 11G bonds, just very briefly as a reminder, what these bonds are these are bonds that are general obligation bonds of the state, and the debt service on the bonds is paid from the state general fund. These projects will impose no general fund cost on the state during the 2003-05 biennium. All debt service that is due this biennium will be paid from the actual bond proceeds themselves. So the community colleges won't get all of the funds that the bonds are generating, because some of those funds will be used to pay debt service that is due prior to June 30th of 2005. This way, there will be no need to appropriate any general fund this biennium. Next biennium, the 2005-07 biennium, debt service will be paid by the state general fund, and we estimate that those costs will equal $6.5 million of general fund per biennium. This debt service will continue through the 30-year term of the bonds. So the state will be paying debt service on this of about $6.5 million for that period of time.
Mr. Binder, if I might interject, we have a spreadsheet in front of us that looks like this. Can you take us through what this illustrates?
Yes, Madam Chair. What this table shows is it identifies the state-paid debt service for post-secondary education bonds that the legislature has approved or is considering for this session. What I've done here on this is that all of this shows new debt, new bonds that are being issued, and I've divided those out between the Oregon University System, community colleges, and OHSU. For OHSU, you have approved all of these projects so far, except for the ETEC capital projects, which is still before the body. These are the bond amounts, and the bond sources these numbers that show bond amounts are actually three types of bonds. They include Article 11G bonds, which we've been talking about. They include lottery bonds in some cases, and they also include Article 11L bonds, which are the bonds that are specified for the OHSU Opportunity Program. Those have their own section of the state constitution for them.
But, Mr. Binder, am I correct in assuming that the debt service payments come out of the general fund, the lottery fund, and general fund?
Yes, the general fund, the lottery fund, and the tobacco master settlement in the case of the OHSU bonds. But all three of these are sources of funds that the state uses to balance the budget each biennium. So these are the amounts of bonds that are being considered. You can see under the community college row, that's what we're talking about here. This is the $50 million in bonds I referred to and the $6.5 million in debt service. OHSU has the largest portion of the debt service. They have over half the total, $106 million for the Oregon Opportunity Program. All told, if all of these projects are approved, they would amount to a total of $208.8 million in state-paid debt instruments with debt service next biennium of $35.2 million. The debt service would continue. Some of these are 15-year terms, some of them 20-year, some of them 30-year. So at least for the next 15 years or so, roughly, it would be 35.2. Then some of it would start falling off. But some of the debt would be due for 30 years.
Mr. Binder, we're adding 35.2 in general fund indebtedness for bond payment. But how much what's the base amount that we're adding to?
The amount that has been budgeted for debt service for post-secondary education bonding this biennium is a total of $53.6 million. So the $35.2 million represents about a 66% increase. Some of the 53.6 would be retired next biennium, but the 35.2 is about 66% of what we're paying now.
Thank you. Representative
Bates. Just a couple of quick questions, Madam Chair. Steve, this is fairly new. It's the end of session. We're trying to run something out here. I've got a few questions, the kind of questions we'd normally ask as we went along. My understanding is it's a 30-year bond. Is there some reason that was chosen instead of a 15-year bond?
30-year bonds would typically be the term that are issued for the Article 11Gs. I think the rationale for that is that the projects are expected to have a useful life of at least that length of time, and that by extending the period, this reduces the debt service that is owed in any biennial period. It's very similar in this sense to any type of loan that an individual might take out, where by extending the term, the monthly, or in this case, biennial payments are lower.
Steve, I asked this question, I think, before on other bonding issues, too. Right now we're in an atmosphere where we have extremely low rates for issuing bonds. That may change in the future. And we asked before what a 15-year bond looks like compared to a 30-year bond as far as an annual payment is concerned. Now, the $35.2 million listed on this, is the debt service. Is that correct?
Is that total
debt service?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's not for this bond, obviously.
No,
this bond's only $6.5 million annual. Is that annual or biannual?
These are all biennial figures.
Did you do any modeling of what that looks like if you do a 15-year bond? You have a lower interest rate, obviously, for 15 versus 30.
I have not done the modeling of that. The number will be less than twice the amount, even though it's being paid off at half the time. It would not be $13 million a biennium for this, but I do not have the exact number for you.
And how much time do the community colleges its sites have to take advantage of this program? I mean, they have to match the money. Some will match easier or quicker, some won't. What's your sense of
the bill?
Roll out?
The bill is very specific on that. It will allow the institutions essentially 4 years from the start of the biennium, so it's a little less than 4 years, until June 30th, 2007, to get the match required to construct the projects. After that time, the authorization for these projects will go away, and a future legislature would be able, of course, to consider extending them, but these projects will expire on June 30th, which is to say that the Department of Higher Education will not be able to distribute the funds. It would be possible, for example, if a college got all the money on June 29th, and there was... Well, that's probably a little late, but they were able to meet that last bond sale. They could continue their construction if the construction took later time, but the actual funding from the state expires on June 30th. These Article 11G bonds, as you know, do require a dollar-for-dollar match. The match will be from community college resources. A potential is actual community college support fund monies. So the bill will give community colleges the option of using some of their support dollars that you've provided for operations to be instead used for these capital construction projects. The funding mechanism in general is that the community colleges are going to take their match funds. They can use whatever resources are available. They can use their community colleges, of course, are able to get bond levies from their electorate and get funds in that manner. They can get whatever those proceeds are, they are going to legally going to give them to the state. And the state is legally going to put them in the general fund to meet the Article 11G match requirement. And then what the state is going to do is going to turn around and match that contribution with an equal dollar of Article 11G bond proceeds and then send the money back to the community college. So technically the money is going to come back to the state, and if you look at this project list, for example, the first list, you know, the first project is Blue Mountain. I'm looking at the last page here, the table. They would essentially provide the state with $367,812, and the state would then give them that money back along with the Article 11G bonds. So they would then have $735,000 for their particular project. The law requires, and this follows the same requirements that exist for higher education for their own projects, that the state cannot issue bonds for any of these 17 projects that you see on this list until the community college deposits the full amount of the required match. So Blue Mountain would have to send in the full $367,000 before they could receive the Article 11G match. There is an exception process clause that's in there, and that says that notwithstanding this requirement, a college, the state can issue bonds for part of the project if they report to the emergency board prior to doing so. So I don't mean to pick on Blue Mountain, but since they're the first one on the list, suppose they were determining that at the rate they were able to get matching funds, after they had $100,000 in matching funds, they wished to request an Article 11G match of $100,000. That's the most they could get at that point. The law is going to say, no, you can't do that. You can't issue that partial bond sale for any particular project unless you report to the emergency board. So what they would do in this case, or would have to do, is they or the Department of Community Colleges on their behalf would come and make a report to the emergency board and basically explain what they're planning to do and make a report on that nature. The rationale for that requirement that there be a report prior to issuing a partial bond sale is to avoid situations where a project becomes partially completed and is unusable and is basically and potentially even unsafe. But what I always think of as the example is a building that has everything except the roof. They can't afford to put the roof on it. You don't want to be in that situation where you have a building without a roof and then it's a crisis and then someone has to come up with additional money after the fact to make that project usable. So the idea would be they would come forward and try to demonstrate, if they want a partial bond issue, that they have some kind of project that is complete in and of itself. The emergency board will not have legal authority to prevent the bonds from being issued, but they could not be issued until after the report. And I think, to be quite frank, the expectation is that if the emergency board says that they don't like this idea and makes that comment, you know, that's the determination. It is hoped that the community college would then not continue to proceed despite the emergency board's findings that it does not find the proposed funding acceptable.
Thank you. Oh, Senator Gordon, what is the timing of the report?
The report would only be issued if a community college wished to request that a partial amount of the total bonds be issued in exchange for them raising a part of the total other revenues that they have indicated in that column. So we don't know whether there will be any reports at all, but as soon as the community college wishes to do that, they will not be able to do that until after the emergency board receives a report. It is potentially possible, since there are 17 projects, that there could be more than one report, depending upon the timing. The department would be the agency that would sort of, you know, actually make the presentation of the request. So presumably they would try to avoid or minimize the number of requests and somehow group them together if it turns out that this happens. And we don't know. This is just part of the law. We don't know if any college is even going to ask this. I mean, I haven't heard anything specifically to indicate that or not.
I have another question.
Please.
Flying a little blind here this evening without the additional paperwork that I know we're all waiting for. But Mr. Bender, you described earlier a role for the Oregon University system. And I'm wondering if we could have Brett and Karen to come forward Madam Chair, to further flesh out for us what that role is. I'm asking, how's this going to work? Thank you.
We should give one of the chair hall.
Timing is everything.
Thank you.
He's lobbying.
What I heard Mr. Bender describe was an arrangement, if you will, that has the Oregon University system actually distributing.
Perhaps it would be advantageous at this time to have our legislative council come forward and take us through the bill rather than have us all speed reading looking for keywords here.
Great. That's even better.
Would it also be possible, Mr. Bender, to have the staff back in the fiscal office make some copies for the folks that are...
I've got our staff running on that right now.
Thank you. Please.
Madam Chair, Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's office. What you have before you is the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 720. The amendments gut and stuff the original introduced bill. So first of all, in Section 1, it sets up an expenditure limitation for both Article 11G bonds and other revenues issued for the community college projects. The total expenditures is $100 million, which is a reduction from the introduced bill. Section 1 also lays out all 17 of the community colleges and their various projects and the specific amounts for each project.
And that reduction, Madam Chair, was from what to what?
I believe it is from the bill that passed out of the Senate Education Policy Committee.
What was the amount in that other, was that the 159?
The version that we had originally was, at the time that it was being forwarded to the committee, was approximately twice the size, slightly more than twice the size. Instead of $100 million in projects, it was about $204 million.
Thank you.
That's correct. Also, starting with Section 1, you'll notice that all of the authorizations, expenditure limitations, appropriations are to the Department of Higher Education or to the State Board of Higher Education as appropriate. And that also is a change from the introduced bill, which placed this authority with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development or the State Board of Ed as appropriate. So in Section 2...
One moment. Representative Bates has a question.
You want to ask questions by section?
I think it would be helpful if we would do that rather than trying to weave it all back together.
Okay. Again, we're kind of running through this kind of blind rather quickly. I don't know if you know the answers. I'd like to have some idea of how these projects were selected.
Representative Bates, we have Cam from the community college system,
we'll speak to it later.
Of the presidents here. So my intention is, after we've gone through the bill and become familiar with the mechanisms, to get into a discussion about the nature of the project. So would that work to wait until that point?
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
Please continue, Ms.
Okay. Then in Section 2 of the draft, it limits the project approvals and expenditure limitations from July 1, 03 through June 30th, 07 is when they would expire. Then Section 3 of the draft is the section of the draft that authorizes the State Board of Higher Education to go out and issue bonds under the authority of Article 11G of the Oregon Constitution. And this provision is modeled after the State Board of Higher Ed. We typically have a bond bill for them that issues Article 11G bonds. And this language in here is almost identical to that language used in that other bill. And so under this, they're told to issue an aggregate principal sum of $50 million for community colleges. So that's half the the expenditure limitation of Section 1.
Ms. Hunt, I do have a technical question. On page 3 on line 17, it reads, for new community college projects for which the emergency board approves funding, from the description that we've been given, it sounds like the emergency board would only actually approve changes from the proposed projects.
Right.
Does that is?
Madam Chair, no, you're correct. You're correct. And the way this sentence reads is that the monies realized from the sale can be spent for three different things. One would be for the projects specified in Section 1. The second would be for new projects, although that's not envisioned. And the third thing would be for payment of capitalized interests and costs. The second that you're asking the question about, I think that language was carried over from higher ed's bill. And it may not, in fact, be appropriate for this bill, because I think you're right that that there aren't new community college projects necessarily envisioned with this entire plan.
So this would be something that would need to be amended in some later iteration of this, or is that your opinion?
Madam Chair, I would also state that if you removed the reference to new projects, it may read that this limitation wouldn't apply anymore and that new projects could be issued beyond the $50 million.
Oh.
So I think perhaps the reference to the emergency board being any those projects being included within the $50 million, which is actually restrictive, and that eliminating that language may potentially be interpreted that the emergency board could issue bonds beyond the $50 million. I mean, we don't see that being possible because there's also an allocation. We also have to allocate bond authority, and you'll see in the section in the back of the bill, we're only adding $50 million to what is being provided already for higher education projects.
I think it would be prudent to put some energy into trying to clarify this, because I know that all of us have toiled in at some point in our legislative careers over bills that were not clearly written.
Okay. Let's continue. Moving on. In subsection 2 of that section, one of the requirements of Article 11G bonds is that the amount of the bond is matched with a general fund appropriation. And so what subsection 2 is doing is very specifically matching each expenditure limitation that's in Section 1 with the very specific appropriation that's found later in the bill in Section 6. And it goes on for until page 5.
Oh, I see. Section.
Yeah. Because there's 17 subsections, so it goes on for a while, matching the various appropriations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Section 4 authorizes the State Board of Higher Education to increase the limit on expenditures for other revenue sources as long as the limit for Article 11G bonds goes down. So if a community college receives additional other funds, resources, donations, what have you, they can utilize those as long as Article 11G bond authorization goes down in an equal amount.
Okay.
And this also is found in the State Board of Higher Ed's capital construction bill.
Okay.
Section 5 of the bill is establishing a new account called the Community College Capital Construction Account, and describes what that account can be used for, which is to do various projects at the community colleges. It's also the account where the other funds money is going to be placed, so that it can be placed in the general fund and be considered general fund revenues for purposes of the match with the Article 11G bonds. And because community colleges, we haven't issued this kind of bond for a very long time, this account didn't exist prior to this bill and was necessary. And so so the Section 5 is setting up some general account language as far as what kinds of monies are in the account and who it's appropriated to, and the fact that the Department of Higher Ed can create subaccounts and those kinds of administrative things. And then what Section 6 is doing is it's limiting the amount of money that can be credited to the account for the various projects between the dates that the projects are authorized. And so the numbers in Section 6 line up with the numbers in Section 1. And again, it goes through 17 of these projects.
Okay.
Okay. Section 7 is a technical section adding various provisions to the ORS chapter relating to community colleges. Section 8... it was necessary to grant the Department of Higher Education some grant-making authority to be able to deliver the money to the community colleges because we did not have this mechanism prior to this bill. And so...
the piece that was in the last go-round of revisions now.
Yes. One of the pieces. So through this section, they are delivering money not only from the proceeds of the Article 11G bonds, but also from those other fund monies that were placed in the general fund to match Article 11G. And so it's getting it back down to the community colleges for their various projects.
There is a provision in here in Section 3 for the Department of Higher Ed to be reimbursed for their expenses. Is there a process that's already in place, and perhaps Mr. Kearns can answer this question, that would be used as a template to develop what these costs would be?
Madam Chair, we, for the record, Grattan Kearns, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon University System, between the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Community College and Workforce, we have arrived at a administrative fee, which would be a one-time charge to the bond proceeds for the Oregon University System for administration of the bond. And that would be one-half of 1%, which would come to, I believe, $250,000. Okay. There is, in addition... generally, costs related to a bond sale over and above that for purposes of payment of bond counsel, preparation of the documents, creating the market. And this may be a sale in which it will be done serially. That is to say, may not all be done in one $50 million batch. It could be done on more than one sale, so that there will be additional costs related to that. But those are for the sale itself, and that's not money that redounds to the university system.
And what was the amount again of the...
One-half of 1% would be about $250,000.
Okay,
$250,000. I can tell you more about that if you want.
Does anyone need more information than that? It does not appear that we do.
It may be less, too. No, I you talked to Bob Simon today.
Yeah, that's the my understanding is that's the ceiling of where we would be, and whatever that number would be, it would go into a suspense account for the use of the system for its administration of the bonds over the 30-year tail.
So, just for personal clarification, would the then the amount that you're actually going to be charged would be based on your tracking of expenses, or would it be based on a percentage of the gross?
Well, I think it would be a yet to be determined reasonable estimate of what that administrative cost would be over the tail of the bond. So that would come out of the proceeds. There is language which would allow for some reimbursement for other administrative costs in Section 8, Sub 3, but we haven't worked that out yet in terms of how the department, the two departments would work in terms of that. But it would be on an actual cost basis.
Madam Chair.
So now I'm confused. So are you saying that there is a potential $250,000 or 1.5% charge, and then there's an additional charge in Section 8, Subsection 3?
Madam Chair, as I understand it, and as has been explained to me by our Director of Capital Planning and Construction, the way we do this for ourselves would be to capture at the time of the bond sale a portion of those proceeds for the administration of the bond debt, okay. And that would run over the life of the bonds. It's done
once.
That's
the 1.5% that you're speaking
of. Well, our share would be 0.5%. It would be a small portion. That's separate from the cost of actually administering and creating the bond sale and paying bond counsel and all the rest of the stuff that would be involved in the bond sale itself. That's an actual cost.
And is that the 1% then?
That would be 1 to 1.5%. It could be as up to high as 2%.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Bender may have had a conversation with my Director of Capital Planning and Construction since I last talked to him, but we agreed that the outside limit for us would be about $250,000 on a $50 million bond sale for our purposes of administration of the bonds in the period after the sale and to retirement.
Okay. Senator Messer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Mr. Bender can answer this for me. Is this charge in line with what DAS would charge for capital construction projects, or I don't know if Department of Education gets involved in this or not, but with other state agencies that do this type of thing?
For example, when there is lottery bonds are issued for a project, there is retained certain amounts for administrative costs there. I think this would be fairly in line with that. Indeed, the way that the Oregon University system now operates is that when there's a project on a campus, part of the proceeds for the bond sale does not go to the OUS campus, but is retained centrally to cover the types of costs that Mr. Cairns is discussing. So basically what the Oregon University system my understanding of the discussion is that they plan to set up a similar type of system for recuperating costs from bond sales where the proceeds go to a community college as they now do for bond sales where the proceeds go to one of their constituent campuses.
Follow up, Senator?
Well, I guess it begs the question if there would be the same kind of accounting task required when these facilities are not managed by the university system.
Yes, I don't believe that perhaps Mr. Cairns would like to comment on that. I don't know if these collections are actually used to finance costs of management of property as opposed to simply the issuance of the bonds and assuring that the payments are made over the terms of the bond.
Madam Chair and Senator Messley, that's correct. If you take and divide the amount that would go during the 30 years out of that $250,000, it would come to about on the order of $8,000 a year for the administrative costs for semi-annual payment of the interest and the management of the bonds. It would go to pay for all of the income tax filings that would be required of those. It would require the work of our controller and our treasurer in Corvallis to manage and see that those debts were retired in the appropriate order. It would be our job to administer the sub-accounts that would be created that would generate that work, and you divide it by the number of campuses, it would run about $450 a year per campus for our back shop costs. So we think we've got it as low as we can, and I think Mr. Bender's got me in suspense. I think he thinks Mr. Simonton can do it for less than what he told me earlier in the day. Okay. And if that's true, then that will be our price.
Thank you.
Ms. Hunt, I believe we are ready to start on Section 9.
All that. Okay, this establishes another fund, and so in this fund, what goes in it is the monies that are realized actually from the sale of the bonds, and so this is where the bond proceeds are being placed, and then the monies in this fund, again, are appropriated to the Department of Higher Education, and it's also from this fund that the Department of Higher Ed would be issuing those grants back to the community colleges to finance their various projects. Also from this fund, one of the clarifications we did tonight was that certain bond-related costs could be paid, and we have a definition of what bond-related costs are later in Section 10, which was copied from other standard bond language that's been used in other general obligation bond legislation and that kind of thing.
I'm on page 9 on line 5, subsection B, as mm-hmm. in boy. It says retire temporary bonds. Mm-hmm. What are temporary bonds?
Under Section 11, those are bonds, let's see here, that are issued to procure interim financing. And this, the Section 11 language was taken from existing language of the State Board of Higher Education for authority they have right now when they're issuing Article 11G bonds and Article 11F bonds. Now, what I'm not sure of is if they actually use this. I'm guessing they don't use this authority every time they issue bonds, only when needed, and I'm getting a nod. And so, again, when this bill was being constructed, the bill is authorizing these very individual projects, but it's also on another level establishing a process to do this that hasn't been established up until this point.
Mr. Kearns, what would be a possible scenario where temporary bonds would make sense?
Madam Chair, I'm thinking about that myself, and I don't have an answer for that because we would not be using our own anticipation bond authority on behalf of one of the projects that would be one of the community colleges, to my knowledge. I don't believe we would do that. But I can't say with absolute certainty, from my knowledge of it, I think that is language which comes forward from the other statute.
That's correct, yeah. It does. So,
thank you.
Let's see. So that leads us to Section 10, which establishes another fund, a community college bond sinking fund, which is the fund that would be paying back the bonds. And so placed in this fund, this is the fund where the legislature would appropriate general fund monies to pay back the bonds. And within this fund, there's a definition of bond-related costs, which I mentioned earlier, that, like I said, mirrors other bond statutes and so forth. So the other costs that could be paid out of this fund would include those administrative expenses that Grant and Karen's just talked about.
If I might just interject, Mr. Bender, on page 9, the subsection B, line 30 of the bill, it says monies that this is what can be credited to the sinking fund. Monies that the Legislative Assembly may approve in lieu of such taxes. Would, for example, the appropriations, the general fund appropriations that the legislature makes to finance the functioning of the community college system, would the campuses have the option of using that money in this type of account?
No. What this is referring to is the fact that the bonds that are being issued under Article 11G are general obligation bonds of the state. The state constitution pledges ad valorem or property taxes to pay those proceeds if necessary. We don't have a statewide property tax. All property taxes are local by local governments, but the constitution does, for all Article 11G bonds, require the state if it doesn't come up with some other source of money, to actually levy a property tax to pay the debt service. Well, what we anticipate happening is that the subsection or the paragraph that you're referring to, monies that the general, that the legislative assembly may provide in lieu, this would be a general fund appropriation for debt service. This is how we always done it for the Article 11G bonds. We never actually issued a property tax. That's part of the language that in the Constitution under general obligation. So this would be a general fund that you would appropriate starting next biennium for these bonds of about $6.5 million. The question, though, that you had about using, I believe you were asking, and please correct me if I'm wrong, about whether the community college support fund monies can be used.
Yes.
What they can be used for, they can be used for something. It's not to pay the debt service, but they can be used to provide the match that the community college needs to come up with in order to get the bonds issued. So part of the match, or all of the match, could come from the community college support fund distribution to a college if that's what the college chose to request or to do.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. So I think that leads us to Section 11, which we talked about earlier about interim financing. Section 12, what this is doing is that it's increasing the overall Article 11G bond authorization that you already authorized in House Bill 3446, and it's increasing the amount in that bill by $50 million. Section 13 is directing the State Board of Higher Education that they cannot issue the bonds until the matching amount of monies is raised. However, there's an exception provided in that if they report to the E-Board prior to issuing these bonds, then they are able to issue them if a lesser amount of money is raised than what's required for the match.
So that would add additional clarification to the issue that I raised on page 3.
I think it does. Also, Section 13 language also is often found in the higher ed bond bill as well, and I think that's worked before with State Board of Higher Ed reporting to the emergency board in certain circumstances when monies couldn't be raised as was originally anticipated during a session.
Thank you.
Section 14 is a new section that was put in because of the concerns of higher education, and I should let Grattan Cairns explain this, about this debt being placed on the financial statement of the Department of Higher Education, and it wouldn't be balanced with assets. And this is a concern of your expert in this area.
Madam Chair, yes, thank you. Section 14 comes as a result of interest and concern of the controller of the Oregon University system, Mr. Michael Green. We would, without this language, and it may be that an auditor may even in the face of this language, give an exception to our financial statement. But it is the intent of the language to say that this debt is something we are managing for others, because we do not control the asset, and thus the debt instrument and the assets are on either side of us. We are simply the broker. The end result is that the holder in due course of the debt for the Article 11G is the state. The owners of the projects are the 17 community college districts. For our purposes, we are acting as a willing broker because we have the expertise and the back shop to administer this at a relatively low cost and not have to create that somewhere else. We're doing this, but for our purposes, it isn't our debt for examining our ledger or our balance sheet. And that's simply what the language says.
So then the debt that the university system incurs to finance capital projects on the university system, is that included in your financials?
It is. And
so then this debt would be included in the financials of the community college system.
Madam Chair, I think that there's going to be some discussion about that. The debt really is against the state of Oregon. As far as the Article 11G is concerned, the obligation runs to the community college. I'm not trying to complicate.
Would you be so kind as to close that door, please?
Yes. What all this language does is say that we're acting as a pass-through agency to enable the state to issue long-term financing on behalf of the community colleges, and that the general obligation bonds may not be attributable to the overall debt reported on the financial statement, including the balance sheet of the department. So it's separate and distinct from what we've issued on our own for our own projects.
But I would assume that the administrative costs and the costs that actually are incurred by OUS would be on your financials.
Madam Chair, that's exactly correct, and that would be the ones that we would, in fact, post, and that would be for purposes of servicing of the debt instruments and management of the subaccounts.
Okay. And then an emergency clause.
Correct.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beverly.
I apologize. Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. This might have been covered, and maybe I was reading when I should have been listening, and I just missed it. But I did read where these interest accrued in these accounts goes to the account. And so my question is, if the project accrues interest and bills in the fund, or if the project comes in under budget, what happens to those excess funds?
Chair Morgan, Senator Messerly, you're correct that the state funds, the interest does accrue to those funds. It's my understanding, though, that the monies from the community college would probably follow the model of the OUS system, in which case the monies are not placed in the fund much in advance of when they're needed. So there's not ever very much interest actually earned off of those funds. If there's extra money, then what I would think would happen is the community college would not post that money to the state account. They would retain it locally for their uses. And if that matching money was not placed in the state account, then the matching Article 11G bonds just wouldn't be issued, or they'd be issued at a lesser amount. Does that answer your question?
Sure.
Okay. Well, it also, if I remember correctly, we flushed a bunch of the accrued interest type of money out of the OUS system in a bill that we passed out this time.
437 created the same type
That's
of treatment
correct.
For
That's correct.
Projects in the Oregon University system.
Isn't that handled in Section 9 where we talk about if a surplus remains after using the money for purposes, surplus and earnings from temporary investments shall be credited to the community college bond sinking fund? That's on page 9.
So 4, paragraph B.
Yeah.
I think that would basically be used then in lieu of general fund to pay debt service owed in a biennium. So that would help relieve the general fund of that cost.
Right.
Okay. But Representative March, I think that's a different fund than what Senator Messerly was talking about, which is the fund that the community colleges are putting their match dollars in. And also policy changes that were made in Senate Bill 437 for OUS in regards to these various accounts and things have been reflected in here as well. So it is consistent with those other policy changes that you did for higher ed when it's issuing its capital construction.
For the benefit of just kind of getting this all welded together in a way that makes sense to us, can you kind of back off in elevation here and just describe to us the various funds and the functions?
Okay. Oh, boy. Okay, Madam Chair. Well, the first fund that you have is a collection fund. And what that fund will consist of is if I'm a community college and I want to proceed with one of these projects, I've raised monies locally through a variety of means. It could be from my community college support fund dollars. It could be from donations, grants, a variety of sources. So I've collected my money, and I'm going to deposit them with the state in the first fund. And then once that happens, those monies then are matched with the Article 11G bond proceeds. Those proceed monies are placed in another account. So then what happens, so you've got monies from the locals and monies from the bond proceeds in two different accounts. Higher ed then is given the authority to issue grants to that community college out of both of these funds to fund their project. Then the other fund that you have is that once you've issued the Article 11G bonds, you have a fund to pay back the bonds, in which appropriations would be placed, interest earnings, that kind of thing.
And the source of the funding for the sinking fund is the general fund.
Exactly, exactly, presumably.
Is that clear to everyone? Senator Mesner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Begs another question, and this is from what I know has gone on with funding our pipeline project in Coos County. Which fund is drawn out of first? You've got the match from the local community college. You've got the bond fund. Mm-hmm. When you start construction, are they pulled out equally, or is the bond spent first and then the...
I'm turning to Grattan Cairns because... Oh, maybe Steve knows.
Mr. Bender, you want to take a stab at that one?
The way that this would work is...
Bonus points.
Is the...
Bonus points.
is after a set amount of match was received, an equal amount of Article 11G bonds would be issued, and the combined proceeds would then be distributed to the community college. They would no longer be state funds at that point. They would be considered a grant to the community college, a restricted grant in that they would have to be used for capital construction of the defined project. Whether the community college at their level would even distinguish between the two fund sources or not, I don't know. They really would have no need to.
Thank you. Any questions? Let's go ahead then, if no one has any more questions about how the bill itself works, and have an opportunity to ask questions from... Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley asked a question at the beginning, and I wanted to make sure that I had responded to her question adequately. I believe I did, but if she wanted to follow up, that would be fine. The only other thing I would say is that the Chancellor specifically asked me to tell you that the department is pleased to act as the broker for these bonds, for these projects, and happy to have the opportunity to be of service to our partners.
Senator Gordon.
I did hear an explanation that satisfies me, Madam Chair. Thank you, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Ms. Hunt, for the work that you put in on this. This is a massive effort and much appreciated. Ms. Pusbrawley, could you come forward and help us work through the list of the capital construction projects? Good evening, Marge. Maybe I'll just say good night, but I'm taking the wrong contact. So.
Good evening, Madam Chair. Thank you. For the record, Cam Croy Sprawley with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Before I begin and talk about the process and the criteria and such, I want to add my voice to that of Grattan Cairns from the university system and say that we do appreciate the role that they have agreed to play in this Senate Bill 720, and do believe that it calls on some expertise that they have and some efficiency that we might gain from it. The State Board is, I'm sure, pleased to know that their decisions around what to fund will be passed along in this bill to the State Department of Higher Education and thusly processed. The I don't know exactly how much detail the committee wants, but the State Board of Education began last fall, almost a year ago, in asking colleges to bring forward from their master plans projects that would meet the criteria that we have listed in administrative rule. And very briefly, the criteria include such things as serve an instructional purpose. That's the first priority. Second, meet an important demonstrated service need of the college. That's the second priority. Meet a facility need that cannot be adequately addressed through alternative, interim, or existing facilities. Serve to complete a comprehensive community college facility. That's the fourth. Meet an important and articulated objective of the college. That's the fifth priority. And reflect evidence of local planning and needs assessment. So each of the colleges were asked to bring to the State Board a first, second, and third priority project that then we went through and ranked according to the priorities that I just gave you, sent them back to the colleges and said, how does this suit you? After some negotiation, we brought forward in a budget request to the governor a list of projects, which you now see about one-third of what we had originally asked for.
So with reference to the individual projects, how far would they have been along in the scoping process before the project was submitted for consideration?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it probably makes sense for either President Schuette or President O'Connor to answer specifically, but they could have been on the drawing board for some time, and in some cases colleges have gone for local levies and have been unsuccessful, so their plans might be very detailed, and others where they are in the planning stages and the plans are less detailed, but since both I have these two experts with me, they can probably answer these questions better than I, specific to scoping.
Please.
Thank you, Chair Morgan and members of the committee. And Mr. Bender, really appreciate that you've taken the time to hear our concerns at this late hour, and also that you're doing so without at least initially having the full materials. And really also appreciate your questions. I think we've all learned a lot from the exchange that has just occurred. With response to the particular question about how long have things been in planning, Commissioner Price-Brawley is exactly right. It differs from project to project. In Chemeketa's particular case, with the number one priority that you see for Chemeketa, we have had service in McMinnville for years and years and have been using facilities that are inadequate for our current needs. So it's been a long time plan of the college to have improved and expanded facilities in McMinnville. And the College Board has recently made the decision to purchase property and has the intention to raise additional resources. And this match that is in the capital construction package would be of significant assistance to allow us to continue to serve the expanded need that an increasing need that is there in McMinnville. And I think that with all the projects, I would just comment in general that there is really a sustained and increased demand for services, and the whole array of projects here will really help the community colleges be prepared to meet, better prepared to meet that future demand.
How? What is the plan that Chemeketa has to meet the other revenue match?
We have just had board approval to undertake a capital campaign, and I think our primary match will be through private fundraising. The McMinnville community is very interested in having additional opportunities, and I know there is at least our initial analysis is there will be significant support from that community to help us complete the project. The board has also discussed a potential bond measure for some time in the future, and that also is something that is possible. It would not be our intention to use general fund dollars for that purpose.
Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. My name is Pat O'Connor, president of Oregon Coast Community College. Thank you for hearing us this evening. The Oregon Coast Community College currently rents its space in Lincoln County. We don't have a main instructional space. We are located in a former bar called Jake's High Tide in Newport, Oregon. It's inadequate for instructional space and lacks adequate accessibility for the physically challenged. Despite having excellent faculty and staff, it speaks directly to needing credible instructional space for our students. We have gone out for a bond twice. We believe that this additional money for bonds would help put us over the top. This has been in the planning since in the mid-90s, and it's been quite a struggle. We hope to run another local bond to help support this particular project, and I think it would be much more palatable to local voters. We would not use general fund money to help support this, but use a combination of other grants and bonding in order to reach that critical need. We are continue to be committed to workforce training and economic development in Lincoln County and sorely needed on the coast.
Ms. Pruce-Brawley, I'm looking at the amount, the total bonding or the total funding amount for the Oregon Coast Community College. The new campus project for Oregon Coast Community College, and we've received testimony that they appear to be quite far along in their planning in terms of scoping the project, and I'm just curious about why the dollar amount for Clatsop Community College, Klamath Community College, Oregon Coast Community College, and Rogue Community College are identical.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we provided initially the cost that the colleges had provided to us of what the project would cost. What you have in front of you today is a squeezing down of that dollar amount to get to the $50 million that was proposed that we bring back. And in working with legislative fiscal staff, we made some choices about what the dollar amounts would be to reach that sum.
Just for personal clarification, the actual amounts of the projects were in excess of what's been budgeted here, but you've reduced the funding down?
Madam Chair, yes, indeed, that is true.
So is there still can these projects still take place at this reduced funding level?
Madam Chair, we did have that discussion earlier today with the community college presidents, and it was a collective decision that, yes, they thought they could move forward with the projects. Some may take longer to reach their full potential as they had intended, but we did not want to miss this opportunity to bring forward the projects that you see in front of you.
Representative Bates.
This is the problem of doing things at the end of session in a hurried fashion and a very confused fashion, so we're just trying to gather some information. It just seems strange to me that when you look at different needs of different campuses, which are obviously very different, I've had sort of anecdotal stories about the situations of certain coastal campuses from the representatives from those areas saying their buildings are totally inadequate and really can't function well. I know other community colleges, while they have needs, are not as great as those needs, and yet it seems like the money is just sort of being spread on a per capita basis?
Yeah.
And how can you have four projects exactly the same, two other projects exactly the same, all spread all over the state, and tell me that it's because of the need of that particular campus? It's not logical that be the case. You must have made some decision how to spread this money out based on something, and I don't understand what it was. Okay, why does one campus get $13 million, the next campus get $3 million, one campus get $600,000? What's the logic behind this? Is there any? We got $50 million to split up. We're doing as best we can.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, it is not done on a per capita basis. This is based on what we originally got from each college about what was their priority project. We have had to make some decisions along with the presidents about what to reduce and how much to reduce. And we went college by college, and they said, I can live with this amount. And that's how we got to this dollar amount, so that they still had enough to move their projects along, but it was under the $50 million cap that we were given.
I think I'm needing increased clarification on how you came to the allocation. I mean, we have a campus upgrade, which I don't know what exactly that is, a campus addition, again, I don't know what that is, and a new campus project, which we are fortunate enough to have the president describe to us, and an urban college campus and technology center that are all willing to go forward with the same amount of funding.
Could I comment, Madam Chair?
Please.
I think I want to be sure that we emphasize that part of the logic for the figures that you see is each college's judgment also of what match they could achieve. So that accounts in part for the specific dollar figures. There had to be a judgment of what match the college could achieve. And also at the reduced figures, the expectation is not that the same thing would occur. For example, a new campus might instead be the first building rather than two buildings. So there is some difference here from the original request that is reflected in the squeeze down to fit under the $50 million.
So what I hear you say then, and please help me to understand this a little bit better, that the campuses have for some time had these plans for capital construction projects, which they may or may not have tried to pass levies or do fundraising on the local level, that you now have an opportunity to use Article 11G bonds to fund half or some portion these projects. And so you have, I would assume, because this decision was only made sometime around the middle of the day here, come to some kind of process where you allocated against the actual cost of the project what the available bonding was. And I think, I mean, it doesn't appear to be arbitrary because there are the same number appears too many times. So the question we had was, what was the process?
And I appreciate exactly how you've characterized it, Chair Morgan, and included a lot of the elements of our discussion. And we're fortunate to have 16 of the 17 community college presidents here in Salem to have that discussion. And we've had previous discussions about the nature of each of these projects. And so we did exactly try to meet the critical needs, or I should rephrase that, begin to meet the critical needs of colleges throughout the state, because we have a shared commitment to meet students across the state. So we did work together, and with the specific projects that are not as clear in the short phrases, we do have a number of the presidents here in the room today if you do have specific questions about individual projects.
Okay, but I still don't think you answered my question. You obviously have projects that couldn't have all come in at the same dollar amount. They had
Correct.
To have been all over the board
Correct.
When they were back in their original campus locations with whoever it was that was trying to raise money for them.
Yes.
When we get them here, they all come in at the same dollar amount. How did you arrive at that? That was the way that you wanted to handle this.
I understand the question. Perhaps I'll ask Commissioner to respond to that.
Madam Chair, we started at a $159 million effort that would total $312 million together for the total package. The first cut brought it down to $101 million, and in that was a discussion with each president about what will it take for you to be successful with this project. We went through, as President Judy said again this morning, we must again reduce it from $101 million to $50 million. What can we reduce your project? As an example, at Clatsop Community College, they stood at $28 million, 14 for bonding, 14 they could raise themselves. They're reduced to $7 million in our discussions. We went to half. It was the way that we had of having, can you do this project, can you begin this project with half if we must cut in half? And if you can't, we need to know that. And if you can do with less, we need to know that. That's how we arrived at this figure. When we got to the half, we were still at 50 plus million. So we had to do some scrunching down. So we believe we have had as principled a conversation as we could have about the dollar figure. And I hope I have finally answered your question. We have taken in an iterative process from 300 million to 100 million.
So then to make this actually work in the functional building of these projects, you're going to have to redesign the projects to fit the revenue.
We might each respond to that. In my particular case with Chemeketa Community College, what it means for us is we have a larger fundraising task. In our case, we will not change the nature or the scope of the project, but we'll have to have a higher target for fundraising for that particular project.
Also, Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the case of Oregon Coast Community College, we'll run a larger bond in order to meet our needs and also to add on some of the needs of the campus on to add on to it incrementally. So we'll live within our means.
And I guess, members of the committee, I would also add that, as Kim has, Commissioner Brawley has said several times now, we do have significant remaining needs, and we'll have to, again, approach the question of how to meet the building needs of community colleges. So we're certainly not satisfying all the needs with what we've presented today.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks to me like you've done a very thorough, within the time frame you have, job of trying to sort this out, and I very much appreciate that. I would assume that there was some give and take and based really on the individual need per campus. And probably I would assume also with the understanding that in the future, when other bonds are available to the community colleges, other community colleges will have a better opportunity or opportunity for more funding. So I guess that brings me to the question, is there disagreement amongst the community colleges, or are we trying to make a problem here where there's not? I mean, we spend an awful lot of time trying to chase this around, and is there a problem, or is this thing going to work its way out?
Senator Mesley and members of the committee, when we left, we were all together on the list you have in front of you. I don't know of any problem with the distribution that you see in front of you.
Just a follow-up comment. I'm sure, at least from the community colleges I have in my district, that the needs are so huge compared to what we're able to fund here that, I'm very pleased that you're able to work out an agreement here, which hopefully will get us a bill through the process and at least get some of these projects started.
Committee, I just had information that there are some issues with the way that the bill has been drafted that will cause us to need to do additional work on it. And what I'm going to do is recess the work session.
Madam Chair, before you do that, I would like to say something.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'd first like to thank Jerry Berger, interim president at Portland Community College, for being present a good part of the day, for your correspondence to me and other members of the Portland legislative delegation, helping us understand how our community college would benefit from this capacity. What strikes me about the conversation that we've been having is that we're asking these folks to respond to logic in how they arrived at their list, and we haven't provided, at least on the record that I've heard, the logic and the cap. And then there's this interesting irony in that the ETIC proposals, I believe, came to us in a similar kind of fashion, and we the way in which we're handling that particular proposal just seems to be inconsistent. There are some inconsistencies here that are just deeply troubling to me, and I think we need to examine those while we are in these waning hours of the session and making huge public policy decisions that will affect our community college system for years and years and years to come, as well as what may be an omission in failing to deal with the ETIC side of the picture, which will also affect that system for years and years and years to come. The fact is that these folks are here because of neglect, 24 years worth of neglect, and they're in being put in a position of taking what they can get. That's the bottom line. That's what this conversation is all about, from where I sit.
Thank you very much. I'm going to recess the hearing on this. Where are we at?
720.
Senate Bill 720, and we will reconvene at the call of the chair, and it won't be tonight. It'll be tomorrow.
Okay. Okay.